Hey, everybody. Welcome to Hobbs and Friends of the OSR. I am your host, Jason Hobbs, and it feels like it's been forever since I've done one of these. About a month. It's been so long that all the people that I planned on talking to, all of them just like ditched me. No one wanted to be on my show. I actually had to find the worst possible person I could think of to be on. Julian Burnick on Hobbs and Friends of the OSR. How are you doing, Julian?
I thought this was gaming and BS. What? shit.
Son of a...
Oh, yeah. Right. Yeah. Great, Hobbs. I'm good. Thanks. Oh, yeah. Great. Happy to be here.
All right, good. Well, that really wasn't the introduction I expected, but I did anyway. We also have another guest, a man who needs no introduction on this show, Jose Licario. What's up, Jose?
Finally knowing you has paid off, and I get to meet Julian Burnick.
Yes.
And I've told you before, Hobbs, for that. When I compared the names, he's got a good name for podcasting and as an evil overlord. You know, Julian Burnick, Lord Burnick. And then you're like, you know, Emperor Hobbs, you know, it's just, it doesn't have that ring. So I'm glad to finally make his acquaintance.
Oh my God.
I really like this. I really like how this is going so far.
It's way better than you expected, probably, isn't it?
Yeah.
All right. So Julian Burnick is the co-host of the Any Award-winning podcast Spellburn that no one ever listens to. So I don't know how they won an award, but he's also the author of Nowhere City Nights. And you have an adventure for that and like a DCC adventure, right, Julian?
Yeah. Nowhere City Nights is a setting for DCC, like 21st century modern kind of Cthulhu horror action-ish type thing. And then just published an adventure, funnel adventure, if you know that zero level type thing for DCC, called Outlive, Outsmart, Outkill. And you play a, you know, ragtag bunch of civilians who are abducted and made to go through a crazy reality show. You'll probably team up and try to beat the bad guy unless you're playing with Jim Skatch, in which case you're cooked.
That might be the first Jim Skatch reference on Hobbs and Friends. I don't know.
Is it?
It might be. I'm not sure.
Sorry.
No, that's good. No, that's okay. That's good.
It's the Jim Skatch reference of the week.
Yes.
It seems like it happens in the DCC community, which I'm a part of. And we're pretty popular in the DCC crowd here on Hobbs and Friends. We're no Spellburn, but, you know, we are.
Yeah. Well, you're no Jim Sketch either. But you know.
Neither of us are any Jim Sketches.
No, that's true.
I prefer to be called James Sketch. If you
know. Jose is going to GaryCon. Julian, he's going to be there with us this year.
Awesome.
I'm very excited.
It's going to be crazy.
It's my first con.
And he's coming from the panhandle all the way to Lake Geneva in March. So I don't know if you own a coat, Jose, but you might want to buy one.
I'm going to try to find some long pants somewhere.
And a stocking cap.
Nice.
I would not go the Edwin route and wear your flip-flops like he did to Game Hole. So it might be too cold for that. All right. So, Julian and Jose haven't met until just now, so that's interesting. But as everyone knows by now, I've met Jose by gaming online. And Julian, I think we met at my first GaryCon. Does that sound right or no? Do you know?
Yes. Like, that's exactly right. You know, I have a good story about that.
Oh, good. Let's hear it.
Because everybody was like, fucking Hobbs. And I was like, who's this Hobbs guy that everybody's like, you know, this guy mentioned him and that guy. Well, who's over there? Well, playing with. And I was like trying to figure out. So finally I put it together and I was like, oh, that guy. So I actually heard of you before I met you.
That doesn't sound good, does it?
Like Carmen Sandiego.
I think it's fair to say I probably heard you before I met you, too. But anyway, and then now your legend, you know, grows.
I guess so. I'm not sure how that is, but I guess so. I actually got to play in Julian's game. It seems like that might have been the first time I ever played in one of your con games, actually. We played in games together and stuff, but I'd never played in a game until Game Hole. And you want to talk about that briefly? Because that was a pretty fun game, I thought.
That was a, what did I call it? A Mutant Crawl Classics, Dungeon Crawl Classics mashup where I had people play Dungeon Crawl Classics classes and but I gave them mutant powers, and I think they were trying to get technological artifacts and stuff. So in other words, you're playing the warrior, you're playing the dwarf, you're playing the elf, and so on. But you're trying to get laser pistols and chainsaw swords and molecular chains and that kind of stuff. And you're in a world with mutations and spaceships and so on. Kind of a Thundar. It's sort of Thundar meets, I don't know, drugs or something. But anyway, it was tried to be very sandboxy and start in a bar with a lot of mayhem and then just let people go off and wander around and kill stuff. And it was pretty fun. That was a weird table, but I thought it was fun. I'm glad if you had fun, then I had fun. You know, I think we had a good time. You guys did I've only run it twice. And unlike the other guys in the other session, you guys actually kind of went through the little mini adventure I figured most people would go through. So that was good to at least kick the tires.
Yeah, it was fun. And I agree. The group it felt kind of funny. Well, we only started with three players or something. And then another guy joined us. I felt like it got a little better, but obviously it's going to change the table dynamic after, you know, you've been playing with one group for an hour or something, and then another guy joins later and like takes another character or brings a character in, but it was still fun. I mean, I liked the idea of the hex crawl, obviously. So, or the sandbox, we should say, but we did crawl through it too as well. So it was pretty fun.
Yeah.
I was actually surprised. I expected to storm off unhappy, you know, it's all Burdick. Oh, this is so bad.
If I knew you were going to play, I would have arranged something really, you know, deserving of the Hobbs. But, you know, I was a little surprised, actually.
All right. So that was pretty fun. So let's move straight into like what we've been playing. Like, I haven't done a podcast in a month, so I have this massive list. So, Julian, you want to talk about like what kind of games you've been playing recently?
Yeah. So I've been running Ravenloft campaign, and I've been using White Box Gothic is what they call it, which is kind of a supplement, I think, for Swords and Wizardry White Box. This is a little weird because I've been using the White Box Gothic thing a lot because it has cool Gothic spells and magic items and, you know, kind of unique stuff. But the Swords and Wizardry White Box stuff I'd never look at or really bother with at all. So I'm kind of just fudging it all into my regular AD&D knowledge, you know, and just sort of playing this mishmash AD&D thing with this White Box Gothic thing on it. Anyway, it seems to be working out pretty well. And running it in Ravenloft, we've played like 7 sessions, and they don't ever really get out of the main town that they arrived in. But you know, that's what they've chosen to do so far. So had lots of mayhem, and they like to burn stuff down. Also have been, I'll give a shout to my friend Mark Woodhouse, who's been running a Crypts and Things campaign for us, doing Barrow Maze, which has been super fun. And then last, I've been playing in Jolly John Carnes's Rogue Trader game, which has also been pretty cool. Of course, I'm the captain, so, you know, I call the shots.
Captain Burnick.
I'm a stable genius, and
I'm almost speechless actually after that.
Yes,
I find it interesting that you say you're playing White Box Gothic, but in all those spaces that White Box doesn't fill in the rules, you're pretty much just using or just replacing first edition stuff, right? Sounds like.
Yeah, basically, I'm almost playing more Black Hack than D&D because it's not a super combat-y type thing. So in fact, we do a lot of ability checks. Charisma has not been a real dump stat, even though they kind of used it like that. They're all finding that there's a lot of social stuff going on. So it's actually sort of this OD&D slash Black Hack slash, I mean, I'm using luck from DCC. So, you know, there's every character has a luck score and that stuff. So it's, you know, I don't know. It's pretty much a homebrew thing at this point.
In my experience, I've found that's kind of what White Box ends up being anyway, because there are so many openings in the rules there that the rulings that you decide on, a lot of people seem to fall back on whatever rules they're the most used to or whatever they like, right? They just kind of fall back on what they're the most used to and say, oh, just let's go from there. So that's pretty interesting.
Oh, yeah.
What about you, Jose? You got any games you want to talk about?
Well, aside from the occasional BX game that we tend to fit in, I've been playing a lot of 5th edition, actually. Of course, I've been doing the 5th edition Isle of Dread campaign that my friend's been running, and that's been going really well. We're 8th level now and had a lot of exciting adventures, and I've actually had a character die, like completely die, which a lot of people say is pretty hard to do in 5th edition, but it happens. And then we've been playing 5th edition as well. You've been running a game called The Curse of the Crimson Claw, which we've been streaming, which I'm sure you're going to mention. And my character, Apator, who is a duly authorized representative of the nation of Dambrath, is making his way in your world with much aplomb. So it's been 5th edition's been pretty much the only thing on my menu.
Yes, I am running a new streaming 5th edition game. At some point, I may just do an episode about that, and we'll get a couple of people and talk about it at length. We're learning a lot about streaming, so that's interesting. It's kind of funny to be playing the game and watching people watch it live and, you know, sending us chats or whatever that aren't just like, hey, there's no voices, you idiots. It's more like, haha, you should use a lumber lich or something, or just, you know, trying to affect the game or, you know, kibitzing on there. I think that's kind of interesting. I'm really having a lot of fun with it. I think the group is awesome. And it's really cool. So there's that I've been playing. I also started a new Axe campaign recently, which is with my family, the Hobbs group, because it's like my cousin Todd, my brother Monty, my cousin Hawk, all playing that game. And my nephew that I had met, not met, but I never even knew he gamed. And the dude's like almost 28 years old. And for the first time we played together on Saturday. So that was pretty cool. You know, some guy you've known your whole life, you never knew when he games. And then you find out, you're like, oh, let's play a game. And you have a flipping blast that was pretty powerful. I thought I really enjoyed that. So
I've only met Monty, but, knowing you and Monty, imagining that many more Hobbs in one room is completely frightening, dude.
Well, Bird is supposed to be in that game as well. He just hasn't showed up. We've only played 2 sessions, but it's been about 16 hours of game time, probably. So,
wow.
The last one was an epic session, and we kind of started drinking kind of early. And so now we're sharing notes because no one really remembers what happened in the game. So... We're sharing the email notes going on, so that's pretty funny. I got in a game of Philic Isles, which is almost BX, right? Labyrinth Lord. I know, Jose, you played in that as well. So Cody's Labyrinth Lord game, I think we got in a session of that or two. What else do I have? Oh, I also have – I've been playing White Box, the fantastical medieval adventure game. So I've been playing the White Box as well with Matt Jackson, Tim Schwartz, Will Arnold and some other guys from that group. And I've talked about it before, I think, with you, Jose. I haven't talked about it online, but I find it interesting how people decide what mechanics to use. That's why I asked you that about Julian. Like, do you have any weird things that you've just kind of made up on the fly to deal with something trying to use a White Box, or is it pretty easy for you because you just fall into Black Hack or First Edition?
Oh gosh, I don't know. You know, the thing I did, I'm a luck check guy. DCC has really, it used to be that I would just say, I don't know, what do you want, high or low? And then you tell me high or low. And then I'd roll a 6-sider. And if it was high, it went your way. And if it was low, it went against you. So now I tend to make luck checks, which I think is a little more interesting because, of course, in DCC, you can spend luck, you can receive luck, you can burn luck, you know, you can do all these things. And so, you know, it's a little more of an interesting resource management thing. Like, well, if I spend all this luck on this roll, then I'm the next time he's trying to screw me and I have to make a luck roll, my chances are going to be pretty slim, you know? So I rely heavily on that. And that's definitely not like a OD&D thing. You know, the ability check thing from Black Hack, like just roll into your charisma, roll into your dex, roll under, like that's the way we played AD&D back in the day. So that's nothing very unique, I would say.
Yeah, that's we play BX that way a lot. We use that a lot. Unless you're like Jose and you decide to make a difficulty check and affect it or something. That's really me. I'm just making fun of him right now.
But, nah.
That's right. He likes like 3d6 roll under and fake
So one of the things that Matt likes to do is he tries to use the saving throw because you only have one saving throw in White Swords and Wizardry White Box, right?
Yeah.
And it gets better as you go up and class level. So he affects that with like a stat plus saving throw. And then you try to make a within a like some kind of modifier, depending on maybe your occupation or whatever narrative that you add into it. I'm not saying it's a great idea. I just thought I'd mention it because he mentioned it on his blog as well. During the game, I feel like it feels a little clunky, but it makes some sense because I do like the way that it gets better and goes up with level. But you've mentioned the luck mechanic, or I use ability burn, stat ability burn in different games. I offer that to people and not just luck. So it's an interesting idea because it's just using more resources, you know, and a lot of the old game systems are about using resources. So I think that's pretty cool.
Yeah, I get it.
All right, so that takes care of the weekly gaming briefly. Man, see, that's what a real show is like. You have the strong format, Julian. You know, if you ever were on one and you wanted to know how to make it better, you could have an awesome format and just follow it and people, you know, keep on track and, you know, just stay on what's going on. You know, they don't get off on tangents like this one right now. But anyway.
I'm still amazed that you gave us written notes. Like, I didn't know you. I didn't think you could write that much. I was like, you got four syllable words here and stuff. It's pretty cool.
There's no four syllable words on here. You liar.
Yeah. He uses Fiverr. It only cost him like $5 to get this.
I know Bird is in the back. Bird is typing furiously to get this thing out.
Mouthing the words as Hob speaks.
yes, he is my Cernio de Bergerac. Right. So let's go on to Everything About You, a segment of the show where we all say something about ourselves that nobody knows. But everyone actually probably knows this, but I wanted to say it on here anyway. Right before a game, I always, when I say right before, I don't mean like 5 seconds. Usually in 5 seconds, I'm fine, but like 3 hours or something, I get really anxious, like it matters or it's an important thing. And my anxiety rises, you know, and I start to freak out. And then I'll be like sending people messages. Hey, what should I do to make this game better? And like by now, all my friends like Jose or whatever, they're just like, you should just wait until the game starts and probably just run it, you know, because it's usually okay. So I don't know what you're worried about. But that's me. Julian, you got anything?
Not many people know this in our gaming world, but I am a published poet. So I write poetry. I've published some. And I work as a poetry editor on a little magazine in town here.
Awesome, man. Maybe you should send us a link to your published poetry and we'll drop it on this the sheet here for people to see when I post it out to the Patreons or something, if you wanted to. Show notes.
Yes. I have even published some OSR poetry in the Dungeon Lord magazine. Tara Frank has published some of my D&D poetry, which I thought was very gracious because fuck knows I'll never find anybody else to publish it. So
the wonder of zines, right?
Yes, exactly.
I think I have that. I think I have Dungeon Lord. I'm going to have to check that out. Everyone, Gary Khan, it'll be there by Tara Frank's zine.
Yes.
Jose, everything about you, man. You're like the most common person on this show. You're probably running out of everything about you.
Oh, yeah. I am lactose tolerant. As a matter of fact, I actively campaign for lactose. I am a lactose. I'm a lactivist. I'm a lactose activist. Nice. I love lactose in all its many forms. So that's something most people don't know about.
I was waiting for the damn breath thing to get in there somehow. A representative of lactose damn breath. All right. So awesome. Still keeping the segment of the show. Jose always bringing it back.
Trying to keep a serious, hard-hitting journalism here.
One of the everyone always seems to say they love Hex Talk from Hobbs and Friends of the OSR. And then whenever people talk about Jose, they're like, I don't know who he is. He games online. But that ICQ thing he said at the end of that one episode was so funny.
Yeah. You know, and I checked it. I told you, I literally checked my ICQ after that, but then found out it's owned by a Russian company. And I decided it was probably better not to be putting that on my telephone.
All right. So, yeah, you could run for president or something.
You beat me to it.
All right. So I don't know what it was. It was a couple of weeks ago. And I was thinking to myself, it may actually have been after we had this argument, Jose. I don't know if we had the argument first or if I had the idea first. But I was thinking about the effect that retro clones or some newer wave of fantasy games or role-playing games that are coming out that people would call OSR games as opposed to, not trad games or story games or anything else, how influential are any of these games that have come out in the past? Or even since, you know, the OSR was created, people would say in 2006, since third edition came out. And I felt like DCC was probably one of the most influential games. And I mentioned that to Jose in some drunken time after a game or something like that. And he's just like, oh, you're, that is ridiculous. What's it done that's influential? And I was like, man, I don't know. There's a few mechanics, la da da. So anyway, you know, he had some good arguments against it. And I think I just don't remember him. But so I called up Julian and I'm like, hey, man, I think you should come on Hobbs and Friends and talk about DCC and what it's, if it's influential or isn't influential. And if it is, what about it is, or just in general and, you know, within the OSR idea. So it's more kind of a gaming theory, not GNS theory like Spellburn would talk about. I can't believe people would even bring that back from the Forge. Yes. I thought the Forge was dead. What's happening?
Hey, my buddy Steve Bean, one of my favorite people, he likes to go down into the academic, you know, rabbit hole a little bit. That was cool. It was different.
I actually love gaming theory. I just, I hadn't really heard anyone talk about GNS theory in quite a while. It's kind of like they've added like some extra letters to it by now. I don't know if you've read anything recently about it, but.
Well, a lot of people liken GNS theory to still believing that the Earth is made up of four primal elements. That's why a lot of people don't use it anymore. It's a neat theory, but
I think we just really call it GNSPTBA or something, right? PTBA now, GNSPTBA, FATE.
Yeah, they added Lizard and Spock, I believe, to it. So,
all right, so what do you think? Julian, you can go first. I asked you. I obviously believe that it is influential. Do you understand the question or no?
The thing that I'm going to quibble with is when you called me, it was like, dude, I really need you to wire me $350.
Well, I'm skipping that part.
Oh, okay. All right. So that's a really, you know, it's pretty interesting because is it influential? You know, not immediately, but I think, you know what, I had this thought in reverse because I've been like a lot of people kind of oohing and aahing over the new Swords and Astonishing Swordsmen and Sorcerers of Hyperborea game. And, you know, what really struck me is how much that book looks and feels like DCC book from 5-6 years ago. I mean, it's kind of roughly the same size. It's very art forward. It's definitely picked up the old school Appendix N vibe. And to be fair, you know, Talanian's original edition of this game was all over Appendix N and, you know, drawing from the same influences and all that stuff, no question. And the rules wise, I don't think it's changed that much, but I'm not an expert on either edition. But I will say that, just as a physical object, I think it really looks like that DCC book in a good way. I think the bar got raised a little bit just from a production point of view. I mean, the art on these books is freaking nuts.
Yeah, I would agree with that. The aesthetic of that has been increased. And I mean, it's obviously not Doug Kovac's art, but it's a Del Teagler art. And he kind of has, I mean, he's very different from Doug. No one is Doug. So I'm not saying that, but
no one is Doug.
It's interesting I never even considered it from an aesthetic view like that. You got anything to add about that on Jose?
Yeah, we did have a little bit of an argument about it, and I was arguing about its influence. And I think, you know, and I even talked to you afterwards and said, you know, you were right. It is influential. I can see your point. And I think I had a bit of a myopic view and was getting hung up on influential, how you're defining influential versus how I was doing it. We kind of waffled back and forth on we mentioned mechanics and we mentioned sales numbers and things like that. And really, I kind of thought about it in my initial assessment as a broader view of role-playing games in general. I mentioned the mega ones, you know, Dungeons and Dragons and the Pathfinders. And then I think I may have mentioned like White Wolf in its heyday being just massive and the influence those brought. But really, when you talk about influence, you made some good points about, you know, people are using mechanics from there and bringing it forward. And if you want to talk about influence in like the OSR community or in the role-playing community on Google Plus as a whole, then I can see that there is a level of influence to it, especially as Julian mentioned, the art aesthetic. I can see that too. You know, the way they've made that single tome work and it's really been popular, I think that's opened the door for, like you say, the larger books, even like the new Stars Without Number book is, you know, 325 pages. It's a bigger book. And they put out the omnibus. That's like a 1,000-page monstrosity. So, yeah, I think in certain ways it has influenced other publishers and other people who are playing that. So, yeah, I kind of agree with that now.
All right. Well, the podcast's over. Thanks, everyone, for listening. Jose's finally agreed with me, but no, I'm just kidding.
No,
so we talked about aesthetic. Do you think, like, there's kind of also this new, newer wave of people using different types of dice, right? I mean, they had fate dice have been around, but I think the Zatchi dice that DCC brought out is kind of a new thing. Would you guys agree with that or no? And other game system have gone with it. Like FFG is a strong for the Genesis system. The new the One Ring game had its own dice, right? Obviously, they weren't necessarily Zatchi dice. You wouldn't call them that. Is that that's not even the right term? Is that the right term?
No, just they're calling them weird dice. I don't know. It's funky dice.
We generally call them funky dice, which is not a scientific term.
But I thought there was a scientific term for it. Is it Zatchi dice? I'm right, right? The different size ships?
No, Luzocchi was one of the guys who made those hard-edged, you know,
game science.
I don't know that it's game science dice.
Yeah,
and
game science.
I think it's the same science guy. Yeah,
Zaki.
I think it's Zaki. Yeah.
But I mean, I thought there was Zaki. A name for like the D5 and the D15 or whatever.
We just call them the funky dice, actually.
Well, there's other people than just you, Julian. I don't know who you're including in your Wii, but I mean.
I like funky dice as well. Oh, I'll vote.
I'm always outvoted. Dice. That's why I always have three people. No one ever goes with me, I guess. I don't, but that's all right. I am the voice of discontent. I think we've agreed on that.
So what other games are using, you know, funky? Like, I know that like Fantasy Flight does that. Fate dice have been out there. Are there other OSR games who are really using them? Because I can't think of any off the top of my head.
Well, I wasn't even necessarily talking about just OSR, but the Genesis system that's the FFG,
oh, yeah.
Right? But the One Ring also used specific sigils or things on their dice as well. Like they have the Gandalf and the Sauron that mean special things when they roll.
Oh,
I don't know if anyone is using, like, I have the dice chain on here. Does anybody, did that come from another game system? Do you know, or was that an original mechanic for DCC?
I don't believe that. I don't know. I don't know of a predecessor for that idea directly.
Alternity kind of had some weird scaling range mechanic or dice mechanic. Didn't, I don't remember for sure, but I think DCC was the one that made it stand out really strongly.
Yeah. I think it was the influencer for the dice chain.
Yeah. But although I will say I'm not a big fan of the funky dice myself.
I've actually been hearing that coming around. I mean, that's obviously been, almost a staple argument. Is it a feature or a gimmick, right? For DCC. But I'm sure Julian has the best argument for why it's such a good idea.
We know we read the emails all the time on the air, and people always say, oh, I can't find – people don't want to play DCC with me because they don't want to buy all the dice and stuff. So, you know, okay, whatever. I mean, you're allowed to have whatever, you know, horrible, evil misconceptions you want. You know, no judgment. But I will say that the dice don't come up that – I mean, it's kind of a basic six dice type of thing. And then occasionally you throw in a D7 roll or a D24 or whatever. But anybody who played AD&D and had to randomly generate first level spells, you were faking a D24 and a D30 when you were 12, right? I mean, it's not really like a huge problem to solve. I mean, there's a freaking app with dice rollers, you know.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, when I was running DCC for the Hobbs group, guys were using the app, but now almost all of them have bought the dice. They're cool. And like, I mean, I make up tables now that use them sometimes. I really like the dice chain concept, that ability to move up and down the dice chain to create different I don't even know what the math is. One of these days I'm going to have Hawk make maybe figure that out, figure out what the math is when you go from a D20 to a D24. How much better are the chances of your success, you know, for being higher?
Well, I mean, that's the nice part about the chain. It makes it really easy to know. You know that your probability on a D20 is 5% for each number, and on a D24 is what, 4, and then a minuscule amount of change. So that's one of the nice parts about the dice chain, is it makes the math a little bit easier.
And I think by adding the extra dice inside the dice chain, it gave you, you know, the steps where he wanted them, as opposed to it being such a large jump from, you know, D12 to D20. Now we have some more, you know, room in there. So I can kind of get where that comes from. And I mean, I'm a D&D guy. I love dice. So why wouldn't I want more reasons to buy more dice?
I think that kind of sums it up right there, that there's a lot of, you know, gamers, of course, are like, oh, God, it's the most terrible thing ever. They made a Ghostbusters with all women, and then they made me buy, you know, use these dice. And, oh, you know, I'm such a masculine. Oh, my fainting couch, please. Then they start looking at the 30 cider and the 24 and the 16. And then, you know, like 2 weeks later, they're like, yeah, I'd like to get the red ones and the black ones with the silver filigree, and give me the blue sparkles and the, you know, because who, yeah, after you're done bitching about it, who doesn't want to have more dice?
Well, I think that's ridiculous. I don't like them, and I only have 3 sets
of DCC dice.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yes. All right. So what about the funnel? I mean, I think people, when they talk about DCC, they talk about the funnel, right? Do you guys think that is a an influential idea? Is it? It's not the first time, because we had 0-level characters in second edition, right? But we weren't really making, everyone has your 0-level characters. Let's go play the Village of Hamlet, right?
Yeah, you had Treasure Hunt too. N0, I think, is what it was. Treasure Hunt was for 0-level characters and a few others. So, but yeah, DCC knew that it turned into a big mess usually. And so the whole idea of putting 4 in there and waiting for the best one to rise to the top, I think, is a pretty good idea.
And I think a lot of people talk about it, and even if they don't play DCC anymore, they still may try that or use that and just to find out about it. So, I mean, this is a pretty long list actually. And I put ability burn on here there, cause I've actually added that mechanic. And I like a lot of DCC players, even if you're playing another game, you use the luck mechanic. Do you use the luck mechanic as DCC did it, or do you use more fleeting luck than if you add that to your game, Julian?
You mean in my Ravenloft game?
Or any game, if you're going to just play a game. Oh. Like I play with Jarrett Crater, and you know he uses this one. What do you do?
You know what? I honestly really like fleeting luck. However, whenever I sleep, I wake up the next morning and then I can never remember what fleeting luck is exactly. So I don't use it, even though I remember that I liked it. I can't actually quite retain how it's different than regular DCC luck. So I just, I haven't ever used it in a game I've run, but a few times we've done it, and it was fun. You know, it's like, I think there's like criticals and fumbles and stuff like that. It encourages you to spend more luck. I ran a game of Linkmar once. I ran like one of Curtis's things. It was really fun. Anyway, it's cool. I remember that it's cool. Yeah, I black out a lot. I have a lot of whiskey. I don't know. Is this thing on?
Jose, what about you? Do you ever use the luck mechanic? I mean, I know you've played DCC, right?
Yeah, I've played DCC. I don't really use the luck mechanic. I usually would fall back on some other idea, like, you know, how unlucky are you? Roll under your least stat, or how lucky are you? Roll under your highest stat, or something. I like to try to repurpose stats for almost everything.
Okay, all right. So I think we all agree, and I mean, I think that Astonishing Swordsman and Sorcerers of Hyperborea, in its own way, has been influential as well, because I really feel like the Midderlands is almost like, hey, how much setting can I get into an OSR game, right? Even though it's not a system, I really feel like the aesthetic of that is built off of the Astonishing Swordsman and Sorcerers of Hyperborea aesthetic. Would you agree? Do you know what I'm talking about?
I think so.
Are you saying, like, is Hyperborea Midderland setting for, you know, kind of built for DC for a DCC-ish type game?
No, I was actually just kind of moving the idea of about games that have been influential that have come out recently and what they've influenced afterwards. And I was thinking that if we kind of say that maybe the idea of the aesthetic of DCC was pushed onto the tome of Ash, has that, as Astonishing Swordsman and Swordsman of Hyperborea itself, influenced other products that have come out after that? And I was thinking that Midderlands is one that you could almost directly say has.
I would think so, for one thing, because Glenn Seal, who was the author and the cartographer and the illustrator for much of the Midderlands, did the cartography for Astonishing Swordsman and did a lot of the other maps and items in there. So, you know, they had a lot of work together, and I mean, that's where the influence is almost direct in that
case. Yeah, I would say so too. What do you think, Julian? Did you have a comment on that or no?
I'm not very familiar with that Midderlands yet, so I'm going to add it to my pile.
I'm going to actually maybe do some other shows on other games, and I'm sure Astonishing Swordsman will come up. And I was thinking of LOTFP as well is another good one. But we're running out of time already, so I got to like move on. We were going to talk about Crypts and Things, but maybe I'll have Julian, or who's the guy who wrote that?
British guy.
John.
He's British. He's British, so his name's probably Nigel.
He's the guy that does Nod? Nod as well? Isn't Nod part of Crypts and Things? Or am I thinking of Blood and Treasure? Maybe that's Blood and Treasure.
I can't remember the guy's name. I love Crypts and Things. It's a really good book. I'm giving them a little shit, but no, it's quite a good game.
I guess that's enough about that. So I'm going to actually go on, man, so we can actually maybe get the show done on time. All right. So these are my time for my appreciation of patrons. So after the big kerfluffle with with Patreon, I'm even more thankful than ever to have patrons. So both of you guys are patrons, so thank you. I appreciate it. In some ways, it makes you feel like still doing podcasts and stuff. It's not because of the money you make, but it's the idea that people enjoy and support your show enough that you really feel like you want to keep on doing it for them. So I'll shout out to you two. Thank you, guys. And also Tim Shorts, Jesper Olson, and Craig. Craig, man, I haven't seen you in so long. It'll be awesome to see you again. It sounds like it's not going to be till North Texas, but keep on keeping on, brother. If you want to become a patron of Hobbs and Friends, you can go to www.patreon.com/OSRNHobbs. What if anyone wanted to talk to you, Julian, about how wrong your ideas are and maybe help you with these blackouts? How would they get in touch with you?
If somebody wants to commiserate about Hobbs with me, you can reach me on G+. I'm pretty active on Google+. That's probably the best way. You can certainly drop me a line at julian_burnick@yahoo.com. I'm kind of a Luddite, so I'm not on Facebook. I'm pretty much an email guy. G+, and then of course hit us up at Spellburn. You know, we've got a podcast out there about DCC, so if we piqued your curiosity, go ahead and check us out.
Yeah, that's great. Spellburn, like I say, did win an Annie, about the biggest Annie anyone has won in podcasting. Silver is the highest you can get, because that other podcast seems to win all the time. So
I think they just kind of, you know, give them a gold on January 1st at this point. You know, they're just kind of grandfathered in.
All right, Jose, if anyone wants to belittle you about how often you belittle me, where could they reach you?
The Belittling Hobbs fan club meets on G+. You can also catch me Tuesdays on YouTube, torturing myself in your game, the Curse of the Crimson Claw. You can watch us stream that. And then, you know, through the various other channels, message in a bottle, whatever you want to do.
All right. So if you want to, I'm on the Twitters at Hobbs Indeed, or most often I'm actually just hanging out at the Twitters at OSR and Hobbs, the Twitter feed of the show. You can reach me at, I don't have a lot of things on here to help me remember anything, do I?
You got a MySpace, right?
I do have a MySpace. It's all about paintball, actually.
Hobbs@AOL.com.
You can email me at Hobbs and Friends@misdirectedmark.com. You can go to the the website, Hobbs and Friends. Oh, I'm really bad at this. Anyway, the last thing I want to mention to you all is the community reached 500 members, which is humbling and insane. I don't know how much, what it means. It means people keep listening to the show and want to join the community and talk about things. Most of the time, someone else at that community answers questions before I do, which is pretty cool. You don't even have to be part of the show. You just answer. It's a very active community. So that's awesome. Tell all your friends and let's get 1,000 people over there, right? Don't you think? Anyone got any last things they want to say, Jose?
Thanks for having me on the show. And I think most of those 500 people are trying to find the Spellburn podcast site.
Because they don't have one, you know, people are just flocking there. Julian, you got anything you want to say?
Just looking forward to gaming my ass off at GaryCon very soon. So hope to see you guys there and meet you in person, Jose.
Excellent, Lord Burnick.
That will be so fun. Hobbs and Friends of the OSR is part of the Misdirected Market Network, the media arm of Encoded Designs, and it's better to burn out than to fade away.